I'm Mohawk Matt, and this is By Hair, Land, and Sea, where we will bridge the gap and have conversations that need to happen. After spending 13 years, both as an active duty Marine and then a Navy civilian, I am now on a mission to serve our nation by providing a megaphone for the right people at the right time. Join me and my guest as we remove barriers so that you can do what you do best. Be awesome. See you in the trenches. What's going on, everybody? We are on a live version of By Hair, Land, and Sea. And what better way to kick off my new podcast by talking with folks that are all about air, land, and sea. I've got a super awesome guest today. And this person is the Chief Executive Officer for the Navy League of the United States. He's going to explain what that is, where that came from, and what it's doing. He's retired from the U.S. Navy. He was a 13th MCPON, and for this Marine brain, it's Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy. I'm going to invite in a great guy, Mike Stevens. How's it going, Mike?
It's going great, Matt. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. He's been the MCPON, which is the Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy. If you don't know what that means at one point in his career, he went from being the lowest level sailor years earlier to the highest level sailor on the enlisted side. So I'd say it's safe to say you've been around the Navy a little bit.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate the warm and kind introduction.
Yeah. So what is the Navy League? Let's just get right into it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can dive into it pretty deep, and I'll try to, you know, keep it, you know, under 2 hours. No, I'm just kidding.
Sounds good.
But, you know, one of the things, Matt, I did when I got to the Navy League is I found it interesting. I went into our library and we have, you know, decades, over 100 years, as a matter of fact, 120 years of historical documents in there. Some of these, you know, 1902 documents are the original documents, you know, the white glove kind of paper, right?
Wow.
And, you know, the Navy League was founded in the New York Yacht Club in 1902. By the Naval Order of the United States. And at that time, their sole focus, their mission was to educate and advocate on behalf of the United States Navy. And then over time, we folded in not just the Navy, but we have the Marine Corps, the Coast Guard, and of course, our merchant marine sailors as well. And the mission grew from educate and advocate to educate, advocate, and then support. So the support arm is supporting service members, sea service members and their families in a variety of different ways. We do birthday balls for the different branches of the service. We do ships commissionings. We have a scholarship foundation for sea service family members. We provide quite a bit of support to the Sea Cadets, the youth program that actually was started by the Navy League, and then later on it branched off to become its own entity. And there's a laundry list of other things that fall under that support area. So it's educate, advocate, and support on behalf of those sea services. And when I say educate, it's really educate the American public and also members of Congress. And of course, the advocacy piece is elected officials, members of Congress as well. So that's kind of the, you know, in a nutshell, that's what the Navy League has been doing for now 120 years.
That's fantastic. And was there a part of your career in the Navy that you, was it something you knew about, or is it something that you came to later?
You know, yes, I knew about the Navy League. I was a little bit naive to everything they did because at the time I was on active duty, the Navy League did not have active duty membership. Mm. So the Navy League's kind of rode this roller coaster a little bit. When it was first founded, it was, you know, the decision was made that it was going to be a civilian organization in support of our sea services because they didn't want senior military officials influencing. Or I should say they didn't want there to be the perception that senior military officials were influencing the Navy League to do things that could ultimately be beneficial to themselves in some way. And this is before the joint ethics regulations existed. And so there was no real governance around it. But then in 1907, under the national president of the Navy League, retired General Horace Porter, who used to be, he was the secretary for Ulysses S. Grant, Civil War veteran, Medal of Honor recipient, and the ambassador to France, became the Navy League's national president. And on his watch, we brought active duty members in. So from 1907 to 1941, we had active duty members. And then just before the First World War started, for reasons that are not outlined or described in our minutes for these meetings, they removed that ability for active duty to participate. So from 1941 until, believe it or not, May of 2001, we had no active duty members. And then under the Navy League leadership, led at that time by Mr. Bill Stevenson, who was our national president, our board voted to provide active duty members with a chance to be a part of the Navy League. So that's why, you know, a lot of members on active duty, they, you know, they're recipients of or have been recipients of the Navy League through a service member of the year celebration, some form of a celebratory luncheon, a service birthday ball, a ship's homecoming, a send-off or a reception. But we just kind of took it for granted that these people were there doing this thing. And we knew what they did, but we didn't have a deep understanding of it because we weren't, you know, necessarily a part of it, right? So that was me from, you know, 1983 until, you know, I retired in 2016. Before I retired, I had a little deeper understanding of the Navy League, but certainly not to the depth that I have now. And so we're hoping that by bringing active duty into our ranks, that will expose them to the Navy League as more junior service members, and then hopefully they'll stay with the Navy League, and once they separate or retire, they'll continue to participate.
Well, I love that you hit that part on the junior side, because I think a lot in the military, as I was in the Marine Corps and others serve, you hear about these organizations, and it's kind of the perception that they're for like the senior officials or they're for like the old folks, but you guys are encouraging involvement at all levels, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, we want you know, every rank of the sea services that we have and those that we support to feel comfortable and free to participate and join the Navy League, because, you know, we want that full diverse package, right? Diversity comes in many different, you know, ways, and we want that full diverse package, and rank and position is one of them, right?
Yeah, no, and that's fantastic. I love that. It's that diverse side of hey, this is how things were for the last 40 years. Hey, here's how things are right now. And you get all those perspectives. That's exciting. So, and one of the big parts of the Navy League is this thing. I mean, you know, this show is called By Hair, Land, and Sea. So I'm going to call it Sea Hair Space. but I think you guys call it Sea Air and Space.
Right.
That you got coming up next week, right?
Yes, we do. So Sea Air Space was something started by the Navy League in 1964, if you can believe it. So this would have been our 57th show, but in 2020, as a result of the pandemic, we were not able to hold the show. So this is the 57th year, but the 56th show. You know, so who would have thought, you know, after 50, you know, at that time, you know, 55, 56 shows that we were going to lose one, and we did. But we recovered and we came out stronger on the other end for sure. We are, you know, I'm so proud of our team, both here at National Headquarters and our volunteers, for their resiliency, their tenacity, their innovation. As I can honestly say, Matt, that we came out of, you know, let's just say we're out of the pandemic, right? I use that air quotes because it's still hanging out there, right? But we believe that we're through the thick of it. We came out of that better off than when we went into it. And that just shows what, you know, the caliber of team that we have. So Sea Air Space is an intrinsic or an integral part of the Navy League's mission of education and advocacy. You know, I'd say probably more on the education side than anything. So we bring people, like-minded people that are you know, excited and interested about the whole of maritime, both under, on, above, and in cyberspace. And we bring them to the Gaylord National Convention Center in Oxon Hill, Maryland, for, you know, 3 days of just, you know, just jam-packed excitement of educational panels and speakers. We have a floor that has over 350 exhibitors with technology in every way you can imagine. And we also have a pier where we bring in different, you know, watercraft. They can showcase their technology there. And it's really an opportunity for industry, Department of Defense officials, government officials, and Congress, government officials, to include Congress, to come together in kind of this safe space and exchange ideas, have conversations, strengthen relationships, build relationships, and hear what's on the minds of the leaders of our sea service members, both active duty and government civilians and congressional representatives. And I think everybody walks out of there with what, you know, we'll call it nuggets of gold, right? We'll call those things they learn gold. And so they come out of there certainly much more knowledgeable than when they walked into the show. Mm-hmm. And so that we look at that as a huge part of our mission portfolio. And I'll tell you, Matt, it's a lot of work to put it together. We did one in August because we had to move from April to August because of the pandemic. And so we only had a 7-month turnaround for this exposition. And the team had zero break. I mean, we literally closed the doors on one show and opened them up on the next. And it's a small team. We don't have a large team here. There's no bench. And every single person matters, right? There's no backups. And I was just talking to a couple of them today over lunch, just telling them how proud I was of the amazing work and the efforts that they put into this, the midnight oil that's being burned. As you and I are on Zoom, as we're on this podcast right now, I'm looking over at my clock at 7:12, and I can hear some of our staff members in the door next to me in a conference room. And guess what they're doing? Sea airspace planning, right? And they'll probably be here till 9 o'clock tonight. And they came in here at 7 o'clock this morning, if that's any indication of their commitment. You know, because I don't tell them they have to work late. You know, we here at the Navy League, we say nobody gets paid for their time. We get paid and we get rewarded for results, right? So they're doing what they need to do to put on the best show that we can possibly put on for all of our customers.
And that's fantastic. And I think you hit earlier that breadth of this is for, there's a wide variety. I think the wrong attendee would be someone that has nothing to do with any of this. But in people in this space, it doesn't seem like there's a wrong person to come, whether you're industry, whether you're government, whether you're military.
Yeah. And, you know, Matt, you bring something up because I would ask our viewers, you know, who in the world isn't touched by the maritime, right? You may live in the middle of the United States or you may live in another country, but you may be a Wall Street banker, or you may be a construction worker, or you may be in the military, right? But who in some way, somehow is not touched by the maritime? And you think of that, you know, greater than 95% of all the goods that are imported into our country come via shipping lanes, right? They land on ports. Those shipping lanes are protected by, you know, U.S. naval forces, right? They're brought over in, you know, merchant marine ships, right? I mean, the list goes on. I mean, you could probably, I think you're in a hotel room right now. I don't mean to call you out, but I think that's where you're at. You could look around that room and you could probably point at, you know, a dozen things that in some way made it to that room via our world oceans, right? So people might think, why would I go to sea or space? You know, it's a maritime expo. It doesn't impact me. Well, I think we all saw what happened when the ships got backed up in the port of Los Angeles and how it affected our supply chain, right? And that was a result. That was a result of not a kinetic thing. It wasn't a kinetic activity. It wasn't a nefarious actor that put mines in the water, created a blockade, or, you know, a hostile environment for shipping, right? It was just trouble getting stuff off of ships and into a pier, right? Because these shipping ports were backed up with empty containers, and there wasn't enough trucks, and warehouse space was not available. There's a whole laundry list of reasons why they got backed up. It's no one thing. So just imagine if somebody decided to do it on purpose, right? I mean, you could shut down our economy for the most part, you could shut down our economy. So I say all that, which is probably too much, to say Sea Air Space is an expo that in some way, somehow touches everybody, because the maritime touches everybody.
No, I love that description. It's you don't think about it. You don't think about it unless you need it, or if you don't have it. Like you said, we all felt the impact, and we're feeling it now, even with all the things happening now with supply chain shortages. You don't think about all the things that go into everything that we have every day. Just one example, kind of related to the sea service, is the second episode. So this I've done lots of shows, but this specific show is newer. And I just did an episode with Naval Meteorological Command and Oceanography Command. And we talked about how, and I talked to the weather team. And like, I was like, what do you mean weather? Like, I just pull up my phone and it just like the weather's there. But like all the things they have to do to have the weather forecast for the ships and all the different related to that sea service that we just don't think about.
Yeah. Well, look, 71% of the world is covered by water. Right. And if you think about how we're all on land today. Right. I think so. It's not a hotel room on a cruise ship. Right.
No, it's not.
So you just think about how massive, right, the United States is as a landmass or other countries. And it makes up 29% of the Earth's surface.
Yeah.
Right. And anybody who's gone to sea and has been out in the middle of some ocean, right, you get a sense for the vastness of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it requires, you know, if you can have 71% of your world covered by oceans, then you have to have many of the same things out there that you have here. Right. While you're out to sea and being able to understand what the weather is doing. I mean, you think the weather's bad here, right? Get out in the middle of one of those oceans, right? And it can get pretty unpredictable out there. So,
Definitely. Speaking of unpredictable, the conference that you guys have, the Sea Air Space, or the exposition, it's more than a conference, it really is. What are some tips? Like, it can be a lot. It can be overwhelming because, like you said, there's going to be fire things happening constantly every session. You can't go to it all. What are some tips that you have from your experience for people attending to get the best experience?
Yeah, I would encourage everyone, first and foremost, go to the Navy League website and go to the Sea Air Space link. There's also a Sea Air Space website, but you can access it directly through the Navy League website. And take a look at the schedule of events, because you're right. There's so much going on at any one given time. You know, we have these education panels, which are made up of a number of professional speakers and various topics. And sometimes you have more than one going on. I think most of the time we have more than one going on. So you have to look at that schedule and say, okay, what is of interest to me? And let me, you know, like I got a, I think I had it here. Yeah. Yeah, I've got, you know, we have these little cheat sheets like this here too that will be available at Sea Air Space. Right. And this kind of has a rundown of, you know, different things that are happening. This isn't all the education panels. These are kind of what we call the big events. Mm. Right. So we have a number of, you know, we have a number of meal events that are going on. We have the Secretary of the Navy speaking on Tuesday for a lunch. We got the Chief of Naval Operations, Commandant of the Marine Corps, Commandant of the Coast Guard speaking on Monday morning during a breakfast. Wednesday during a lunch, we have former CNO, Admiral John Richardson. We have former Commander, European Command, Admiral Stravitas. He's going to be speaking. And then Admiral Jamie Fogo, Commander Naval Forces, former Naval Forces Europe and Africa. He's going to be moderating that. And that's a breakfast on Wednesday. And I just kind of give you, as those are just teasers, right? There's breakfasts and lunches every single day for those 3 days. And those are what we refer to kind of as our keynote speakers. There'll be 1,200 people in a room for these events. Then we have these multiple education panels, what can be anywhere from 300 to, you know, 800 to 1,000 people, depending on the panel and the interest that people have in it.
Well, and speaking of the panels and such, I know you guys have something, this is the first time you've done it. It's kind of that Navy's Open for Business, Shark Tank meets America's Got Talent kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Matt, we've, over the last few years, so the exposition, I mean, it's hard to really say just how exciting and interesting this is unless you've been there, right? Because it's electric. When you walk in, you can feel the energy just from the people and the conversations and the different things that are being discussed and all the, you know, I'll just call them cool toys down on the trade show floor, right? So yeah, this new event, you know, we call it here locally, we can't say it, we can't brand it as a Shark Tank, right? Because Shark Tank's already trademarked. But every year, as exciting as it is, we want to do something new, right? We want to add value to the exposition. We want people to have a new and exciting experience. And there's a couple of things we're doing different this year. And then there's about a half a dozen things that we're doing either for the second or third time to include these brand new things, right? So this is an opportunity. We love small businesses. We want small businesses to get a chance to showcase their stuff. We want them to get in front of people that make decisions on what's in the best interest of our naval forces and our maritime, right? And it's hard sometimes when you're out there as a small business and you're grinding away, you're innovative, you're doing different things, you got a great product, but it's hard to get it in front of, you know, people sometimes. And so this new event that we're going to do that you just mentioned, this new event is an opportunity for small businesses to showcase their stuff, right? And thank you for being a part of it, right? Because we know you're going to be the host of this, right? And then we've got some, you know, half a dozen, I think close to half a dozen, maybe five senior DOD officials that are going to be there, right? Reviewing these products, making comments, talking about them, and giving these people a chance to showcase their stuff. So we're super excited about that. And we're grateful for the, you know, we met you when you were working at NavalX, which fell under research, development, and acquisition at the time. Secretary Gertz was the head. Yep. And, you know, you guys were excited about innovation and small business. We talked to your team. You saw that we were excited about it. And, you know, we really started to dial up our involvement with small businesses. We have a whole section of the show that's just small businesses, and they have an opportunity, whether you're participating in this event or not, they have an opportunity to showcase their products.
Well, that's what I think is so cool is it's changing. You guys have been this thing across the Navy League and across sea air space for many, many years and decades. And you're seeing the shift that needs to happen. And so you're shifting with it. You're taking those rough seas. You're dialing in that weather and you're kind of seeing where it's going and shifting to that. Yeah. And I think this is a great start to that. And what I actually heard from one of your team members, Julia, was who's kind of kicked a lot of this off. And I've engaged with a lot who's crushing it like your whole team is right now. But she told me that even big companies are excited about this, because they take work and they want to help and learn all the new things going on. Mm-hmm. And so whether your team, and so this is for anyone that's listening or watching later, if you're enrolled in the small business event, great. If you're not, it's a great time to just come and see what's out there.
Yeah. I think people are going to be blown away by some of the innovation that occurs at the small business level. They have to be innovative, right? Because they're scrapping. Yeah. They're trying to get out there. And you know, and make it in this defense space, in the small business space, and they want to one day be medium-sized or large companies themselves. So, yeah, it's going to be, yeah, Navy's open for business, right? It's going to be, I'm telling you, it's going to be exciting, right? This is going to be, and I think you're going to see people, you know, there's going to be applause, there's going to be a little bit of hoo-yah going on, right? Oh. I think it's going to, because you're going to make sure that that happens.
Hopefully there's no, like, we're not kicking anybody off stage or anything.
Yeah, none of that.
Nobody gave me a hook. I haven't been given a hook yet, so.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a really exciting opportunity. And you've also got something that's kind of, you've had it going for a few months, but I know you've got some plays for it during Sierra Space. It's kind of your new think tank that you've got going on. Can you talk about that?
You know, Matt and I were talking before the show, and he said, look, if we run out of things to talk about, you know, at the 30 or 45 minute, you know, we can end it early. And I said, oh, don't worry. You're not going to have to end it early, because there's a lot to talk about. and I will, look, before I even start talking about this, I have to tone myself down, because my level of enthusiasm on this is through the roof, right? This has been, this new think tank, the Center for Maritime Strategy, has been a labor of love for almost 3 years. I mean, you talk about innovation, working through all the challenges, partnering with people, having conversations, business case analysis, you know, all the things that you have to do, you know, so here it is, it's in place. In November of this year, November 21, we kicked off the Center for Maritime Strategy. But that was like literally the tip of the iceberg. I mean, all the work that went into that. And you know, look, I got to give a shout out to our Navy League membership, our volunteer leadership. Because an organization that's 120 years old can sometimes become pretty rigid, right? It can be set in its ways, because there's a lot of, this is the way we do business. But my hat's off to them, because they said, hey, we have to look for new opportunities, and let's be bold and let's be innovative. And under really three national presidents, Mr. Alan Kaplan, Mr. Bill Stevenson, and Mr. Dave Riley, right? They each serve a 2-year term. So for that period of time, they all had a piece of this, right? It had to be a pass down. There had to be a belief in it. There had to be synergy behind it. And then our executive committee, and then ultimately our board that approved it. And then we had a really special committee, Matt, that worked on this. So the committee consisted of Admiral John Harvey, former commander of U.S. Fleet Forces Command, Mr. Doug Demeny, who's, you know, a mega home builder out in Arizona, and then Mr. Frank Russo, retired Navy captain and financier extraordinaire out of New York. He's the New York council president and lives up there. And then lastly, the chair of that committee, our 31st Chief of Naval Operations, John Richardson, right? So that was kind of like the brain trust. And then I was fortunate enough to just jump on that train and be a part of it. And then, you know, ultimately we had to go out and find a dean, right? A leader of the center. We always knew that whoever that leader of that center was going to be had to have the cachet, had to have the intellect, you know, had to have the knowledge and sea power. I mean, all these things was going to be a make or break position. And almost on accident, because we asked this person to come in and just share his thoughts with us on, like, how do you think this center will do? Like, is it necessary? And through those conversations, we ended up going to him and saying, would you consider being the dean of the center? And that's retired 4-star Admiral Jamie Fogo, former commander, Naval Forces Europe Africa. And I mean to tell you, Jamie came, we brought him on board. He grabbed the center by the horns. He's hired his team. He's got, you know, two analysts. He's got a navalist, he's got his EA in place. And I'm telling you, they're turning out the work of 20 people right now, because they are really getting busy. So this new Center for Maritime Strategy is the only organization, I dare say the only organization in the world, that is solely and completely focused on the maritime domain that I mentioned, right? That under, on, above, and in cyberspace, and space, of course, when I say above, that can do two things that are really unique. One is we have 195 councils around the world with over 30,000 members that can take that message to the citizenry that they live amongst, to their state and local elected officials in the area of advocacy, right? And help to proliferate this information about what the center is working on in the area of maritime strategy and thought leadership. And we, as an organization, we can take that information to Capitol Hill and advocate on the Hill. So we have, you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of organizations, and they're all good. They're all great organizations that do bits and pieces of the maritime, right? But what they don't do is singularly focus on the maritime, and they don't have that component of the grassroots and the advocacy piece, right? So we feel that the Navy League's always done a good job, you know, advocating and educating at the level that it was intended for, which is kind of Capitol Hill down, but we wanted to accelerate that. We would like to one day be able to testify before Congress. We want to be, you know, hopefully we're called on at some point to talk with our most senior officials about advice and recommendations on strategy that they're developing. You know, we don't develop the strategy. We don't tell people what to do, but we're a resource and we offer opinions and positions, right? Yeah. And so at Sierra Space, first time ever, we're going to have the Center for Maritime Strategy breakfast, and Admiral Fogo will moderate that. We've got over 800 people signed up for that breakfast. And when we said, let's do a breakfast, we didn't know if we were going to get 10 people because we've never done it before, right? It's a bit of a gamble. We went big, we went bold, and I think there's an appetite for it, and people are excited to learn more about it and hear the conversation. That's me toning it down.
That's the calm version?
That's the calm version.
Good to know. Well, I'm going to tone you back up because I want to talk about something else, because we could go on for hours. But I want to talk about something else that I know you're also really excited about is I think it's the third or fourth STEM event that you guys have done. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're really trying to get me dialed in, right?
Yeah.
Let me get a drink.
Bring it up.
So the Navy League, before my arrival, I got here in 2019. Before my arrival, the Navy League had been doing a STEM event at Sierra Space. But we had been doing it every other year because there was also another big STEM event here in Washington, D.C. And it was bigger than our event, and it could take away from your audience, right? So the decision was made, hey, let's just do it every other year so we're not in this kind of headbutting competition with this other event. Then we decided, look, if we're going to do the STEM event, let's do it big. Let's go out and let's look for supporters of this. And so we had industry and government stepped up to really offer some support. We really want to focus on the underserved communities of the DMV area, Northern Virginia. Right, give these young men and women a chance to come in, you know, elementary to high school, a chance to come in and really experience a great STEM exposition. You know, in full disclosure, the Navy League really doesn't generate any revenue off of that event, right? We do it. We put a lot of work in it and we do it, but we put the vast majority of anything that comes in the area of support back into the STEM event itself. So we decided to do it every year. And the first year we did it in 2019, we were a little concerned because we didn't have many people register. We couldn't get a lot of exhibitors to show up. And I would call it, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was like a 6, right? It was worth doing. Then we brought in a digital marketing manager. We did a better job of getting the information out there. We got a little more sponsorship and we decided to go a little bit bigger with it. And the second time we did it, we had to shut it off because we were exceeding fire marshal. You know, we were getting close to exceeding the fire marshal numbers in the space. And I think we had, you know, at or around 2,000 people that came to it. And the first year, you know, we maybe got about 900, right? And I'm being generous. This year, we've already shut it off because we can't take any more registrants. It's twice as big. No, it's almost three times as big as the 2019 show.
Wow.
And we went from trying to convince people to come there and exhibit to people wanting to exhibit, and we don't have any more room for them. So there's exhibitors that want to come in and show their stuff, and unfortunately we can't fit them in because we're out of space. So I think we're probably going to have to look next year to a different location on that Sunday, because we've just outgrown the space, right? And I mean, there's some really, if I can use the word at my age, cool, right? There's some really cool stuff, and I'm looking forward to it. So we do that on Sunday, Matt. That's so the Sierra Space, if you look at it, it's a Monday through Wednesday event, but the Sunday before that, it's just committed to STEM. So we're super excited about it.
That's awesome. It's a great talk to what we pulled earlier of the, you got a lot of, again, a lot of the keynotes, a lot of the speakers at the event itself are some of the senior leaders because the experience and things that they're sharing and being involved with, but you're offering other opportunities to connect with that youth audience, to connect to those, that up and coming future sailors, future service members, future people that are going to support things you guys are supporting now.
Yeah.
And I just think that's incredible.
Matt, how many stories are out there about a young person at some point in their life who saw one thing or heard one person talk that inspired them to do something great themselves? I mean, our country, the world, is full of amazing people who started because they heard a thing.
Yeah.
Right. And if that STEM event can be the catalyst, can be that, you know, that one thing that plants that seed in that young person's mind that says, I can do that. I'm going to go do that thing. And then one day they become, you know, an astronaut, or they become a fighter pilot, or they end up driving a ship for the United States Navy, or, you know, going to the Coast Guard or going to the Marine Corps and doing amazing things, or going out into industry. Maybe one of them becomes an engineer that develops the next class of supercarrier, or, you know, those sorts of things, right? I mean, there's so many stories out there like that. And so the Navy League is excited to be a part of that. I mean, we feel like if there's just an opportunity to change the direction in a good way of one person's life, then that STEM event is worth doing.
That's incredible. So I want to pull one as we kind of end up on our time, because again, we could keep going and going and going. You want more? He's like, wait, I still got like this much time. No, I want to pull on a little bit more back to the Navy League in general, and a little bit about you is you could be doing anything that you wanted. Why is it that you keep giving your time to something like this?
Yeah. Look, I think my wife is listening to the show right now, right? And I know she's listening because she said she was going to. So, you know, look, in full disclosure, when your wife is listening, you got to be brutally honest, right? Because she'll call you out, right?
Yeah.
If your phone rings, it'll be her saying, what he's telling you is not accurate, right?
Ask him this question.
Right. So I will tell you, I don't know, Matt. It's in my DNA. I just have a hard time doing something that doesn't matter. Like when I get up in the morning, I have to be excited. I mean, look, we've all had jobs, me included, right? I've been working for wages for over 40 years, right? I mean, I grew up in Western Montana, digging ditches and bucking bales and setting irrigation pipe and feeding cattle in the snow, you know. You know, I grew up in that environment, so I know what hard work is. And I'm going to say some of that work is not work I necessarily enjoyed, right? It taught me life's lessons, and I'm better off for having had the experience. But I certainly wasn't enthusiastic about it when I was doing some of it, right? So I know what that feels like. And my father worked in sawmills and he was a logger his whole life. And I know what it looks like to have, you know, get up in the morning and just go out there and grind it out every day. And so it was important to me, and it's important to me now, to find meaningful work, paid or unpaid, that affords me personally the opportunity to make a difference. And I know that sounds a little corny. And I know my employees probably think I'm a little corny sometimes, because, you know, I tell the team here, I said, if a person can find themselves doing something that in some way makes a positive difference in the world that you live in, right, then you found your dream job. And we get a chance to do that here. We get to support the men and women that serve our country. We get to support our country by advocating and educating for a strong maritime power. And if that moves the needle just a fraction, then it's worth doing. And so, look, we all want to make a good living doing what we do, but do you want to make a ton of money and be miserable every day? Or do you want to, you know, you want to do okay and be happy every day? Right. And I don't know about you, Matt, but I choose to be happy and content. Mind you, look, we have our days. We work hard. We put in the hours. Not every day is rosy, right? But every day matters for sure. And so I just can't see myself doing anything other than something like this, right? I mean, maybe one day I'm not at the Navy League. I don't know. You never know what the future holds for you. But whatever it is that I'm doing, I hope that, you know, I have an opportunity to make a difference. And I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, because I've gotten to know you a little bit.
100%.
Is that deep enough for you? Is that corny enough?
Oh, that's great. I mean, well, it's not me. I got to check in with your wife to see if that's accurate or not. She's the real test. No,
she can tell you what I'm like when I'm doing something that I don't enjoy. And she'd probably say, I'd rather have my husband doing something he enjoys, because he's a bear to be around when he doesn't.
Well, and it's so true. And it's what you're starting to see over the last five, even the last 2 years, is really that shift of people trying to find that thing that fuels them, whatever it is. And it's very clear and obvious that this is for you right now in your life. This is that.
Yeah.
This is that for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I grew up in the Navy. I was an aircraft mechanic and a helicopter crew chief. And, you know, so you say I was a blue collar worker, right? Out there working on helicopters on the flight line, on the flight deck, and all different kinds of weather. But I loved it, right? Because I knew I was making a difference. And you can do that in the military. You can do it in the private sector. If you're a welder, pipe fitter, truck driver, right? And that's what you love doing, and you feel like you're making a difference doing that, then that's your calling, and do it right. Right. If you're a scientist or an engineer or something like that, same thing. Right. I would just encourage everybody to find that thing that they enjoy doing, whatever that may be, and then put everything into it. Life's too short to be doing something you don't enjoy.
Definitely. Couldn't have said it better myself. That's fantastic. So how can people get involved with the Navy League?
Look, we're a great organization. We've got a great history, and we are, even though, like I said, we're 120 years old, we're really becoming a very dynamic, and when I say young organization, I mean young at heart, right? You could be any age and join the Navy League if you're willing to, you know, get out there and do things and make a difference within our mission. And we encourage people that want to be, you know, affiliated or associated with supporting our sea services in a number of ways to jump on our website, NavyLeague.org, and right on the front, you know, front page of that website, there's a join now button, right? And you can join as an e-member for $25 a year, right? That's nothing. $25 a year. And then we have various other levels of, you know, membership. But if someone wants to jump in and jump in today, they can jump on that website and sign up for $25, and they can be as involved as they want to be. You know, because a lot of organizations that have membership, not everybody's involved. Some people say, hey, I want to join. I want to get the news. I want to know what's going on. And I want to support the organization that's supporting our sea services, but I don't have time to get involved in council level activities or events or things like that. And that's fine. Right. And then other people say, look, I want to join and I want to be involved. And so they can join, they can get involved with their local council, their Navy League council. And there's a laundry list of things that they can do. And they can get involved all the way up to the national level one day. You know, you could find yourself on the council president, a region president, find yourself as a board member and one day an executive member. And then who knows, you might one day become the national president and chairman of the Navy League, right?
There you go.
There's all kinds of tremendous opportunities.
That's incredible. Well, Mike, anything else? I don't know if I should ask you anything else you have to say because we might just keep going.
I'm like, you're cutting me short, man. No, hey, listen, I want to thank you, right? I want to thank you for, you know, you connected with Julia Simpson, who does all of our external outreach for us, or most of our external outreach. You connected with her, and I think you got to know her when you were working at Naval X, and for, you know, getting involved with us, for doing this podcast, for being a part of this event at Sea Airspace, and for affording us an opportunity to reach out and have a conversations with the listeners of your podcast, Hair, Land, and Space.
Hair, Land, and Sea. Yeah.
Hair, Land, and Sea. Right. So thank you for that opportunity. And thank you for anybody who's out there listening. Appreciate you hanging in there for, you know, 40 minutes or so.
Hey, you're welcome. It's a great opportunity. I'm great to be partnering with you guys. I actually just remembered one thing that I have to plug because I'm also speaking at this. And if you're out there listening and you're a veteran, so the Sea Airspace event next week has what's called the Transition Connection, I believe. And it's for veteran transitions. So yeah. Another thing I'm speaking at, so we should probably talk about that for a sec.
Yeah, thanks. So just when they thought they got rid of me, right? This is something we started doing a couple of years ago. It's another one of these, you know, bold and innovative concepts. And so we have what's called Transition Connection, and it's an opportunity for veterans, both currently serving and people that have separated, military spouses, and frankly, people that are in the maritime space, because you don't have to be a veteran or military spouse to go to Transition Connection. If you're at Sea Airspace, you may be poking around looking for a new opportunity. And so we have a number of companies that have set up their recruiting booths in there, and you can come by and talk with them. And who knows, maybe you find something new and exciting or just something new, right? Look, I get, there's two things I have to mention, Matt. I was going to actually ask you for a couple seconds here, but number one, while I have, you know, a few people listening, I want to thank our Navy League volunteers. I mean, they are committed. They love what they're doing, and our organization just couldn't exist without their dedication, right? So across the world, across the globe, I just want to take a minute to thank them for doing what they do, because they make not a dime doing it. And they give up a lot of their own time and resources to be a part of the Navy League. So thank them. I want to thank them. And then, of course, I want to thank all service members and their families for their service, regardless of your branch of service. But I am a little bit biased towards the sea services. So I want to, you know, I want to thank our sea service members and their families specifically for what they do for our nation and, frankly, for the world every single day. So thank you again, Matt.
You're welcome. Thank you. And folks, thanks for joining us today. Learned a lot about the Navy League, Sea Airspace, what they've got going on. We talked about some things they have going on this year. It'll happen next year. It continues to go. There's a lot of opportunities for you to jump in, be a part of it, whether you just want to get the information or contribute yourself. So Mike, don't hang up. Everyone else have a fantastic evening, and we'll see you next week in Maryland.
Thank you.